Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry says he wants the city to take over the downtown Jacksonville Landing. Meanwhile, ruffled feathers on the Jacksonville City Council. And the city breaks ground on a new regional transportation center. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app. Listen there anytime or on iTunes. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, a rally in St. Mary's over proposed development on Cumberland Island. Plus, a live in-studio performance as we hear a little barbershop quartet from the Jacksonville Harmony Chorus. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday. Time for our weekly roundtable as we welcome two Davids. David Bauerlein from the Florida Times Union. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
David Cotton from the Financial News and Daily Record.
Good morning.
Folio Weekly editor Claire Goforth.
Good morning.
And A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics.
Hola, ¿cómo está?
Guys, good to see you. Lots to discuss this week, everything from the mayor's moves around the Jacksonville Landing to plans for a new downtown transportation center and more. But our top story, actually our top story this morning is the Jacksonville Landing. Mayor Lenny Curry on Wednesday accused the owners of the landing of mismanaging the downtown shopping plaza and said he's working to put the site under city control. Curry says his vision for redeveloping the landing would begin with Slayman Enterprises giving up ownership of the buildings. They sit on prime waterfront real estate that owner Tony Slayman leases from the city. Slayman bought the landing for about $5 million in 2003. And this is the latest tussle in a long-running struggle between Slayman and city officials over the future of this prime downtown waterfront property. So we're going to begin the hour with a look at this and take your calls. What do you think should be done with the Jacksonville Landing? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on Facebook. David Bauerlein, let's begin with you. Nothing new to see tension between Tony Slayman and whoever the mayor is at any given time over the Jacksonville Landing. So now, though, our current mayor, Lenny Curry, is saying the city should just own this property. Is that even possible?
It's possible, but there's two main routes they could do it. Essentially, Slayman's got a lease for the land that's owned by the city that'll go for another four decades. So either the city can buy out the lease, which is a negotiation, whatever millions of dollars would be involved in that, or the city could try and find that Tony Slayman is in default on the lease and is not living up to his terms, in which case you get a long court battle. So not an easy path in either way that they would want to go forward.
David Cotton is sort of a he said, she said. Tony Slayman says the city just won't work with him. The city says Slayman's trying to bully them.
Yeah, it's interesting to notice that both of these parties have come to the media to draw this out into the public eye. Very interesting to know what happened behind the scenes to where this now is out in the public. Who knows? Who knows what both sides really want out of this deal?
Yeah, well, Claire. Perhaps Tony Slayman made the mistake of backing the loser in the last mayoral election, because he did back Mayor Brown at the time. You know, a few years ago, we had a plan. It would have involved about roughly $12 million city investment to redevelop the landing. They didn't like that. They went back to the drawing board. Now we're sort of in this state of limbo with the landing. No movement is being made on either side. I think we can all agree that something needs to be done with the landing, but do we want to be worried about someone ruffled feathers or feeling bullied, or what's best for the city financially and if for the future?
It's 549-2937. There's also a lawsuit. A.G. Gankarski, the city has filed a lawsuit against Slayman Enterprises a couple of years ago. This has to do with unpaid property taxes and a dispute over a parking lot that would go across from the landing to provide more parking for people that want to visit the landing. And that's been a big sticking point for a long time. People wanting more access to this property, and parking's been a big issue that just does not seem ever to be resolved.
Yeah. I mean, there's a been a breakdown in relations between Slayman and the city. I mean, Slayman, you know, bet on Alvin Brown in 2015 after betting on Mike Hogan in 2011. He's making some good bets here. He was in Alvin Brown's TV ad. And, you know, Lenny Curry keeps score. If you go against Lenny Curry in the campaign, if you say something against something he's doing policy-wise, he's keeping score. Curry's got a very aggressive general counsel in Jason Gabriel. Jason Gabriel put the Police and Fire Pension Fund in check. That was something that hadn't happened before. And, you know, there, you know, things like, you know, not providing parking, things that maybe other administrations, other general counsels might have let pass, you know, the Curry administration's not. Now, there's something to bring up here also. Last night, Jacksonville Historical Society, Jake Godbold, basically said the city needs to take back the landing, you know, and needs to be in a better condition than somebody who owns strip malls running it. You know, so you've got those tailwinds. On the other side, though, you've got legislative resistance. I reached out to Lori Boyer, who was there when Godbold made his remarks. Lori Boyer,
president of the city council.
Well, she's still president for three more days.
Right.
Four more days, whatever it is. Anna Broche, on the other hand, said, I want to hear what the mayor has to say. I also want to hear what Slayman has to say. So it's not as simple as, you know, Curry says it, I believe it, that settles it. It's also, you've got this other, you know, component with the city council too, and that's going to come into play also. So, you know, stay tuned, get your popcorn ready.
David Bauerlein, this is frustrating for the public that would like to see these petty disputes resolved. And the bigger picture, I think, is everybody wants, well, most people want this to be an attraction, not a point of political infighting.
Yeah, if you've been to the Landing lately, it's a ghost town. It's really depressing to walk through it in terms of all the vacant space. Now, the rub of the issue is Tony Slayman thinks he's the guy to redevelop the Landing. He thinks he can do it. The mayor has no confidence in Tony Slayman doing it based on, he says, a track record so far, the Landing. So that's the big issue, is who is going to redevelop it. There seems to be agreement that it needs to be redeveloped. Is Tony Slayman the guy to do it? If he's not, then the city has to find a way to move him out of the picture. But from the standpoint of the public, yes, there's no doubt that people would like to see the Landing be better than it is. I think Slayman and the city agreed a few years ago that it needed radical changes. He was ready to demolish the buildings and rebuild.
And then that sputtered out.
And that sputtered out basically because they've been tied up in this lawsuit. And also, I think, because you have a new administration that doesn't have confidence in Tony Slayman being the person who's going to take the Landing to the next level.
And by the way, this lawsuit is apparently headed for a jury trial.
Yeah,
they're not settling this thing.
No, and if that could give us an indication of how serious Tony Slayman is about maintaining control of the Landing. If he puts his digs his heels in, he has the financial ability to drag this out for many years, and then the Landing will just continue to fall into further, I guess, disrepair might be the word for it, and we'll be sitting here in 5 years having the same conversation.
David Cotton.
Yeah, I think the same exact thing there. I think, you know, someone who grew up here and used to walk around the Landing, and there used to be so much there to do. It's to your point, Melissa, it is very depressing to see, you know, it just so empty nowadays.
Yeah, nobody wants that. It's unfortunate.
They do pack out for concerts.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course. But day to day. People want to see a thriving hub, not a half-empty place. Let's go to your calls on this. What do you think should be done with the Jacksonville Landing? 549-2937. Bobby on the north side. Hey, Bobby, good morning.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Through my job, I have many interactions with Slayman Enterprises. And I got to tell you, this is a fight that I believe the city should really get involved in. Tony Slayman is the last one you want to have in charge of any city property. I could go into detail, but I will not. But again, he does not have a history of being a visionary. I'm not a big fan of some of the things that Mayor Curry has done, but I got to support him in this fight because this fight started before he came into office, and we really need to get this property back into someone's hands who has a vision and not just wanting to take all the gravy off.
So would you like to see another developer take it? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What we need to do, and this is, I believe you're sort of oversimplifying the new administration animus towards Mr. Slayman. There's a lot of people who have that same animus, and he's not a visionary, okay? He, again, I really believe if it takes 5 years, 6 years, 7 years to get out of this bad deal for the city, then we could do that. And, you know, nothing easy. I mean, nothing worthwhile is ever easy. It takes a fight. And if we want to have a vision for downtown, the center point has to be the landing.
Okay, thanks for the call. AG.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Tony Slame is a frustrated political boss. You know, let's look at it like it is. And, you know, when...
Why do you say that?
Because he backs candidates, he puts money in, and he puts money into campaigns that have no strategy. Mike Hogan in 2011, that's what got Alvin Brown elected, because Mike Hogan was such a horrible candidate, but Slayman kept pumping the money in. Alvin Brown 2015, Slayman, oh, I'm betting on a winner, so I'm getting in a TV ad with Alvin. Well, that didn't work out either.
But what does that have to do with the real estate development piece of this?
It has everything to do with the real estate development piece of it, because Tony Slayman does not inspire confidence in anybody in City Hall. I mean, that's the reality. And if you had an iconic development there, sort of like the Landing was 30 years ago, an iconic development, you might have things like the contemporary equivalent to the Sharper Image and things like that in there, instead of walking through there and basically seeing like Chernobyl hit. I mean, that's the thing. It's a dead mall, it's an eyesore, and it's a distraction from the other development like the Laura Street Trio, which the city is trying to get going, which the city is looking at ways to incentivize. And until the Landing piece is fixed, the Laura Street Trio investment, such as it will be over the years, is diminished. So
Slayman Enterprises is one of the largest landowners in the city, and they are pouring millions of dollars of property taxes into the Jacksonville's budget every year. It's worth noting that. I mean, City Hall may not have confidence in them, but I would say that decades of history in Jacksonville suggest that they are successful in some areas.
Okay, what about the caller's point that he doesn't see Slayman as a visionary? What about the renderings we all saw a few years ago? David Bauerlein, what was it, 2 years ago, where Slayman put forth this plan to demolish the current structure and put forth what looked like a pretty cool new look for the property. It did have the vision, I think, that a lot of people liked, but that did not go forward.
Well, ultimately, because it is city-owned land, whatever the vision is for redevelopment, it's going to have the city's input into it, whoever the developer is.
And to AG's point, whoever the developer is needs to play ball with whoever the current administration is, which right now is the Curry administration.
And absolutely.
Okay, Paul in Jacksonville Beach. Go ahead, Paul. Thanks for holding.
Yes, thank you. I don't know Mr. Sleeman's business or anything like that, but if you look at I've been in Jacksonville for 10 years and I live down the beach. I never go to the Landing because it's horrible. One of the people on the call said it's depressing. It really is. And when you think about it, you've got this beautiful river that cities would die for. And to me, it's something like get some of these successful developers in and let them submit plans and pick the best one. If this Mr. Slayman has a shot, well, give him a shot with others. But I don't think we should let one person hold this thing up, whether it's Mr. Slayman or someone else. The city is on the move. Jacksonville was voted one of the best places in the country, number one in this one piece on the internet for investing in real estate. You've got the new Daly's arena now, bringing a lot of top acts to Jacksonville, bands and things that we didn't really have before. This is the Landing is the piece that needs to happen, and one of the callers said it too. If it takes a little while legally to get this thing squared away, let's do it, because the people in Jacksonville are here for the long term. Let's build something modern, beautiful, take advantage of the river, put some parking in, and people will come and it'll thrive. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Ron in Mandarin. Hey, Ron. Good morning.
Good morning. I take it here Mr. Slayman is being held as a scapegoat for the problems of not enough people of traffic downtown. I keep telling everybody, I've been telling him for 25 years, that the only way to get business downtown and rejuvenate the Landing is to move thousands of people downtown like every other large city in the world. That's the solution. And no, sure, they tried to build, bring people down by building million-dollar condos. You need apartments for $600-$700 to $1,000 rent. Young people that they go out and spend money and have fun that would shop at the Landing. And if you put thousands of people downtown, every department store in the country is going to want to be down there. And you're going to have corporations building high rises downtown because they got instant employees.
Thanks, Ron. Retail follows rooftops. David Cotton.
Well, I mean, if you look at what's happening in the last couple of months, there have been several residential projects that have gone through the process either at DIA or, you know, through city council that are on the way to being developed. I mean, La Villa's got some projects moving forward. The South Bank seems to have some projects moving forward. But, I mean, you're not going to see the big high-rise residential construction right now. The market's just not there. But, you know, there is a point to that.
Okay, and the number to join us as we discuss the top stories of the week, 549-2937. By the way, here's an email from Ira. It smacks of eminent domain abuse. Buy his lease for fair value and resale to a developer. Thanks for that. Speaking of the city council, still a few days before the big leadership change on the council, but tension seems to be rising between the old and new guard, in particular between incoming President Anna Brochet and former council president Bill Gulliford. How will this affect a number of initiatives that are being closely watched? Everything from how to deal with the city's opioid crisis to other problems. A.G. Gankarski.
Well, you know, if you look at the council leadership race that happened between Anna Brochet and John Crescenbeny, John Crescenbeny was the establishment choice. You know, he had six or seven pledges very quickly, and he had behind-the-scenes backing from the mayor's office. A senior staffer in the mayor's office was twisting arms, also twisting arms on behalf of Crescenbeny. And, you know, a classic ironic moment, Randy Wise from the fire union at the behest of Tommy Azzurri. So despite all of this, Anna Brochet got the pledges she needed and got the presidency. Anna Brochet has basically, she looks at everything skeptically. She wants to review deals. I mean, whether it's the Landing, whether it's the pension deal, whatever it is, she wants to have input. She sees the city council as a policymaking body as well. If you go back to 2015 election, Anna Brochet got elected despite the Republican Party. There are people in the Republican Party phone banks telling people to vote for Kim Daniels over Anna Brochet. So Anna Brochet owes nobody anything. And in a city hall that has run pretty much symbiotically between council and the executive branch for the last 2 years, it's going to be a different type of negotiating strategy. You know, the mayor and Brochet have to figure out a way to work together. And on council, meanwhile, you're seeing all of the, you know, the Gulliffords, the Tommy Azzurris, the John Crescenbenys, basically backbenched. On finance this year coming up, you're going to see a block of African-American Democrats from minority access districts basically having a swing vote in finance. You also see Danny Becton, who has criticized many times the administration's fiscal policy on that finance committee. So it's going to set up for an interesting August when they set up, discuss the mayor's budget proposal.
Yeah, I was going to say, for those of us who sat through finance committee budget hearings, which are
endless, always so exciting, David.
I don't think there's really a scenario where this, there's going to be projects taken from one part of the city and moved over to Northwest Jacksonville. What usually happens at the end of all these long hearings is there's some amount of money that they found that's still available to be spent. And that's where the finance committee can really weigh in and say, okay, we're going to use it for this. More library hours, another stormwater project.
And what about this opioid thing? Bill Gulliford wanting about $1.5 million to deal with this
six-month pilot program.
Mushrooming opioid crisis in this, not just in Jacksonville, it's everywhere.
It's pretty much a pro forma bill. It's the type of thing that somebody introduces, they feel good, they do a press conference, et cetera, and it goes through. What happened in this case, it got through all the committees, but in each committee, you had somebody teeing off on Gulliford for not following the process, using Gulliford phrases like slippery slope to say, well, have you vetted this thing? Have you actually seen how this would work? Do you have a guarantee how this would work? So, you know, the questions that Gulliford has asked, you know, people who are on the backbench of council for years are getting fired back by him, by the people who are once on the backbench of council. And I wanted to go back to David's point point because it's important. You're going to see the African-American bloc, you know, they voted as a pack. They said they were voting as a pack in the council leadership race. They were as good as their word. It's not going to be business as usual this year because they have no reason to do business as usual. The council president doesn't have reason to do business as usual. The finance committee doesn't have reason to do business as usual. It's not Lori Boyer. It's not Crescenbay. It's not Gollifer. It's not Schellenberg and, you know, people who, by and large, are making nice with the mayor's office. It's people who want to make their mark. And that is where the rubber hits the road with this particular process compared to other years.
It does speak to the division within the local Democratic Party that's been going on for many, many years. There certainly is there's the Northwest Jacksonville block of Democratic leaders, and then there's the other leaders. And, you know, people right now in the Democratic Party, they've been scrambling since Trump's election, trying to figure out how the party can find cohesion. On the local level, we're certainly not seeing that.
Okay. Another big story. Tuesday, officials broke ground on the new regional transportation center that has long been planned in the La Villa neighborhood. Here's JTA CEO Nat Ford.
It's not just any facility. It will be a state-of-the-art transportation hub where nearly a dozen modes of transportation will connect. A facility that represents the fulfillment of a visionary plan to enhance mobility in our community.
Okay, this has long been in the planning, guys. The groundbreaking already seen as having a positive impact on development in the La Villa neighborhood. They're going to basically put all transportation into one hub. Buses, Skyway, Greyhound buses, and maybe even, we can dream, light rail at some point. David Bauerlein, when we look at the artist renderings of this, it looks pretty exciting. They anticipate it will serve more than 12,000 daily riders. Your thoughts?
Well, it's a cool-looking design. I think I compared it to the Walt Disney monorail and kind of the idea of these trains running right through buildings and everything. So whether it's going to have a huge impact on the neighborhood, I'm not sure. But, you know, it could have an impact on transit simply because they're doing a lot of other things to improve transit. $2.20 a gallon gas is not going to be with us forever. And they're going to have some things in place for when people say, all right, I'm going to take the bus. Maybe they'll have a good experience and they'll start to get some of those choice riders to use it regularly.
That's the big challenge, is getting more people that really love their cars to maybe think about taking the bus or getting on the Skyway if they're downtown. David Cotton.
Yeah, I mean, besides work, they also have to have a reason to come downtown too.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple of my friends on social media sort of complain saying, this is great, but I still don't want to go downtown because of this, that, and the other stereotype, whatever you want to put out there. I think there was also some talk from Mr. Ford about, you know, this phase three, this bringing light rail into that, and I don't think that's anywhere close to happening either.
Right. It's just geography with Jacksonville when it comes to mass transit. The city is so large that the cost to add light rail that's going to be practical for people to actually use is prohibitive.
And, you know, there's been talk of a light rail spoke eventually coming up our way from Central Florida. But I haven't heard anything about that in quite some time.
Yeah, until the track is laid, I am skeptical of those proposals. I mean, it's something we've been talking about for a long time, and you know, I've given up hope on that. But let's look at immediate impacts that you're going to see over the next couple of years. You're going to see construction jobs over in La Villa. You're going to see development that you haven't seen in a long time over there. Councilman Reggie Gaffney represents the area. Said that this is something he's going to basically message on in his reelection because you know it's about jobs for people in his district. You know, Ford talked about how it's going to make La Villa the live, work, and play area of that part of town. That remains to be seen. But, you know, this infrastructure project is, you know, fulfilling an infrastructural need, it's fulfilling a community need, and it's fulfilling a strategic need because, you know, the Downtown Investment Authority has said they want to get La Villa going and they see this as a big part of it. So if you're looking to integrate the downtown area and bring the kind of development over there that you might see on the South Bank or the North Bank, you know, then that's a really good start.
Okay, let's also talk about this headline, new digs for JEA. I'm curious to get your thoughts about this, everyone. On Tuesday, the JEA Board of Directors approved an agreement with City Hall to build a new downtown headquarters for the utility. This is their biggest construction project in years. It will change the downtown skyline, and it is to be financed with public money. How is this all going to work? David Bauerlein, what's going to happen to that JEA tower? that's topped by that former revolving restaurant. By the way, I've been in there once. It's kind of interesting. What do you think about this?
Well, my colleague, Nate Monroe, compared the inside of that building to the Overlook Hotel in The Shining. So we'll miss the ability to have bizarre descriptions of that building, the Jetsons type
revolving restaurant exactly. On the top. Yeah, there are some boardrooms in there I've been through, and it does look like the Overlook Hotel. That's very true.
I think we're going to see that building imploded. It's hard to see that if JEA doesn't think it's useful for its long-term use, that somebody's going to come in and say, oh, but I think it's good for the next 50 years. So they're going to build a new office tower, and that's going to go the way of history books.
They're going to do a land swap with the city and move over to a plot on West Adams Street. It's the plan anyway, between the county and federal courthouses. Now, what about the cost to the taxpayers? David Cotton, we're not hearing a lot about this, what this will cost all of us. Over the years, JEA sometimes struggled with resentment over bonuses it hands out to its key executives and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've, and Nate wrote about this woe is me posture from JEA, and now all of a sudden they're, you know, embarking on this, what, $57 million project. So not sure at the moment right now what it's going to cost at the end of the day. I think we're also a couple of years out from this actually happening, and, you know, DIA is now going to negotiate the term sheet here and find out what it's going to really cost.
Well, here are the positives. JEA and the city both have strong credit ratings. You know, that's not going to change anytime soon, even though the pension agreement puts a cap on how good the city's you know, credit rating can actually be. And this is Lenny Curry's JEA board. Remember that he basically, you know, purged the JEA board of people he thought weren't loyal to his agenda. So, you know, these are Curry's handpicked people. Some of these people are some of Curry's biggest donors, some of the biggest donors in the city. And I was in the mayor's budget review committee this last week. One of the things that are being planned, a demolition of old buildings, the old courthouse, the old city hall. You know, they're looking to revive the landscape downtown. And, you know, there's no takers for these old buildings. I mean, that's exactly right. It was said previously. You know, nobody wants a 50-year-old building, you know, with mold issues, with whatever issues we don't know about, you know, and basically the city is going to look to revive downtown's landscape so it doesn't look like 1974 anymore.
But I hear you can saddle those rats in the old courthouse and ride them around.
Oh, you know, Claire Goforth, I always count upon you for these types of incisive observations.
I'm glad to be of service.
Okay. Also, making news this week, hundreds of people came out to three locations around town on Wednesday to apply for one of the newly available jobs at the Amazon Fulfillment Center going in Jacksonville. 4,000 jobs, a few of them high paying, most of them not. But new jobs for the community. Your thoughts, panel.
One of the many stories we broke on FloridaPolitics.com this week was one about JTA looking for a federal grant for electric buses going from the park and ride over at Armsdale to the Amazon facility. And there's a reason for that. There are transportation issues getting to the Amazon facility that are going to be experienced by the, you know, people who are applying for those jobs. So this is something where the city's going to have to work out infrastructural issues, transportation issues, all of that. But in a short term, it's jobs for people who need them. It's a proof that incentives work, at least in that limited way. Definitely the Amazon's going to work out a lot better than, say, Katrina Brown's barbecue sauce plant.
I don't think it's proof that incentives work. I think Amazon came here purely out of logistics. I don't think that it's about the incentives.
You think they would have come regardless?
Company. I do think so. I do think that it's important to look at what these jobs actually entail. People are required to lift very heavy items over very long shifts in conditions that have been referred to as very similar to the, you know, the old days of the meat plants. And they have GPS trackers, there's cameras everywhere. It's a kind of job that, yes, it is a job, but is it a good job or is it the worst job you'll ever have in your life?
Well, you know, people need to go to school.
David Bauerlein.
Well, yeah, clearly people are applying for them, so there's a need for the jobs. To what extent those jobs are a path to future advancement, I think, is the point Claire is bringing up, or is it basically where you go in, you work, you get so tired and fed up with it that you back out You haven't really
built Amazon has been criticized for its workplace conditions. That is a fact, yeah.
Yeah, more of a job rather than a career in the long term.
All right. And finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. And only in Florida are people arrested for stealing cans of dust-off compressed air and then sniffing them in the parking lot. This happened in Vero Beach. 35-year-old Dennis Flynn was seen entering the Walmart there and proceeding directly to the electronics department, where he selected a two-pack of dust-off compressed air and concealed the merchandise down the front of his pants.
I guess he wasn't wearing skinny jeans.
Video surveillance. People never stop to think that, as you pointed out, everything has cameras these days. Flynn caught on video surveillance out in the parking lot, sniffing the cans. They found 9 cans all over the parking lot of the Walmart.
Well, maybe he had COPD and he was just trying to get some oxygen.
Only in Florida do fake
whippets.
Only in I remember whippets. Only in Florida do fake police officers pull over real ones. WSVN-TV in Miami reports that Milton Morales Perez tried to pull over a Miami cop for using her phone while driving. The arrest report says Perez flashed a silver badge and pulled over public information officer Kenya Falat. She was in full uniform at the time. Morales Perez was charged with impersonating an officer.
So much for a citizen's arrest, right?
Yeah, PIO Falat facing no charges for her improper use of a cell phone while driving. I think that is banned in Miami-Dade County.
Of all the police officers you could pull over, you pull over the PIO.
And it made the news. And speaking of news headlines, we always appreciate our all-star panel. Thank you so much for giving us some time this Friday. David Bauerlein, David Cotton, Claire Goforth, and A.G. Gankarski. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You too.
Later on.
Thanks,
and we'll be right back.
How is Jacksonville spending our tax money? For years, city leaders have talked about bringing jobs and updating infrastructure to make the city more attractive. But are those investments spread across the city equally? Join our panel of experts and moderator Melissa Ross for a live interactive televised discussion on June 29th. Submit your questions and RSVP to wjct.org/events. Community thread, city spending, where should our money go? June 29th at 8 p.m. on WJCT-TV and 89.9 WJCT-FM.
I'm Ira Flatow. Happy Cephalopod Week. On the next Science Friday, we celebrate those brainy adaptive creatures and the technology inspired by them, like camouflage that changes over time, or self-healing materials inspired by squid suckers. It's our annual Cephalopoddy, all on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, one unlikely jazz instrument and the story of two very different players. Brandy Younger and Edmar Castaneda and the joy of jazz harp. I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, this weekend, activists will rally in downtown St. Mary's, Georgia, to announce opposition to more development on the Cumberland Island National Seashore. Just last week, the Camden County Board of Commissioners voted to allow more time for negotiations between private landowners on the island and the National Park Service. They're putting a little bit of a pause on an ongoing zoning variance request or even a brand new zoning district on the island. Both of those ideas have turned out to be quite controversial. Alex Kearns is with St. Mary's Earth Keepers, and she's on the line. Alex, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So you're rallying on the about the island Saturday at the downtown waterfront park in St. Mary's. What's the purpose of the big rally?
Well, really, it's
to give people a chance to come out, to talk about the situation, to learn more about it. It's kind of a love song for Cumberland Island as well. There are so many people really around the world that love this tiny, fragile little national park. And this is just an effort to get together and allow everyone a voice. And it takes place, of course, right beside the Cumberland Island Ferry offices and directly across from the National Park Service office. So we'll all give them a wave, and they are charged with protecting the island and the public interest, and we're thrilled that they've kind of put the brakes on this now and that the National Park Service will be involved.
And what is going to happen next? Up until this point, there'd been a lot of debate and disagreement over the future of Cumberland. Most of it is a national park, thousands of acres designated as wilderness. It has the beautiful deserted beaches, the wild horses. There are some landowners on the island, though, and they still own about 800 acres. The Candler family, they're the heirs to the Coca-Cola fortune. They asked for permission to subdivide their tract, their 88-acre tract, and that set off this whole firestorm. And so two questions for you, Alex. What's going to happen now with these negotiations with the Park Service? And what is your response to those who are on the side of the landowners? They say that they still have private property rights, even though their land is part of this national park, in a sense.
Well, as far as what's going to happen now, the National Park Service will look at every possible option. They are constrained somewhat by the Cumberland Island National Seashore enabling legislation, the congressional act that allowed for the formation of the island. That and the purpose statement basically said that the eventual plan for the island was to return to a primitive state. So any decision that is made really cannot openly violate that. I absolutely sympathize with the property owners. Throughout the years, they have worked closely and in partnership with the National Park Service and with the citizens to look after the island. What we're learning now, certainly on social media, on Facebook, they're being very open about this. Part of what they are seeking is to have High Point, their compound in the north, turned into fee simple land. Right now it's retained rights. Several months ago...
And can you explain a little bit more about what that might mean?
Well, retained rights means that after... It's an agreement made between the landowners and the National Park Service that after a certain period of time and upon the death of so-and-so and so-and-so, the land would revert to the national park. Fee simple means that they just own the land outright. The 87 acres that started all of this just outside Sea Camp is fee simple land owned by Candlers and Warrens and others. High Point in the north is retained rights land owned by Candlers and Warrens and other. So basically they're saying, turn High Point into fee simple land. We want it outright. And if you don't do that, we're going to build in the South End. That's how this kind of translates to the public at this point. Whether or not the National Park Service could do that, it certainly would present a questionable precedent for not just this park, but all national parks. We don't know, and it could take a year or more for this to be decided.
We'll continue to follow it. In the meantime, it is a rally for Cumberland Island Saturday at the Howard Gilman Waterfront Park in St. Mary's from 10 to 4. Alex Kearns is with St. Mary's Earth Keepers. Hey, thanks for being on the phone with us.
Thank you very much, Melissa.
And we'll be right back.
Next time on 1A, it's the global edition of the Friday News Roundup. America's relationship with North Korea gets worse.
What happened to Otto is a disgrace, but he should have been brought home a long time ago.
London comes under attack again, and Saudi Arabia's king rewrites the rules on succession. The global edition of the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT's Great Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at a fraction of their value, at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. Bid now. The auction continues through June 26th at 8 p.m. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele inviting you to join us this weekend for a Prairie Home Companion. Along with the Royal Academy of Radio Actors, Serena Brooke, Tim Russell, Sue Scott, and sound effects man Mr. Fred Newman, we have Esperanza Spalding and Dawes in the house, along with comedian Aparna Nancherla, plus the hardest working band in public radio, and Ms. Gabby Moreno. All this, my song of the week, and more. Hope you'll join us.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WGCT.
Here I go again, my, my, how can I resist ya? Mamma mia, does it show again? My, my, just how much I missed ya.
Welcome back. Well, the global smash hit based on the songs of ABBA is coming back to town. Mamma Mia is on its farewell tour right now. It's your last chance, I think, to catch it on a local stage. Denton Yockey is the executive director of the Thrasher Horn Center for the Arts, and he's here now with more about the big show and some upcoming shows as well. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I have to jump in here and say Mamma Mia was just Tuesday, so the last chance is over.
Oh, we've missed Mamma Mia.
We missed it. We broke records at the theater for sales to a musical at Thrasher Horn Center, and it was a great, great night and a great show.
I apologize. I thought there were more shows, but that gives you an idea of the excitement over this farewell tour for Mamma Mia.
That was our final show of this last year's season, and we announced at that show next year's season.
Okay, so let's talk about that. The Thrasher Horn Center has a Broadway lineup coming up for 2017-2018. Four big touring musicals. Let's talk about them. They're A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, Cabaret, The Wizard of Oz, and Jersey Boys. Pretty exciting.
Really exciting. We're very excited about the season. And this is, we don't have a specific formula, but it has developed that sometimes we get to add to our season a Northeast Florida premiere, like A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. We had once a couple of years ago, which was a Northeast Florida premiere, and we're excited about this one, too. It won the Tony for Best Musical 3 years ago.
Now, most people are familiar with Cabaret, Wizard of Oz, and Jersey Boys, but Gentleman's Guide, maybe not. Tell me a little bit about that one.
It's a little bit of there's a little bit of a con man arc to the whole thing, and his romance and his climb to the top of the family hierarchy. So it sounds more complicated. It's really a lot of fun.
And a Tony Award winner. So
and a Tony Award winner.
What now? Thrasher Horn down in Orange Park, bringing Broadway quality productions to Orange Park. The Artist Series has been doing that in downtown Jacksonville as well. But this is another really cool entertainment option for people all over the region.
For people all over the region. Listen, some people want to come back and see a show. If the show has already played the Artist Series, like Jersey Boys has, they can come back and see it again. I know I like to see Jersey Boys as often as I can. And I've seen Mamma Mia at least 10 times.
Yeah.
But so it's another option. It's another date option. It's another location option. And we like to say over at Thrasher Horn Center, can you have too much musical theater? I don't think so.
No, you cannot. And what about Cabaret, too?
Cabaret.
This is based on
the Sam Mendes revival from about a decade or so ago. So it's updated, very fresh. You know, certainly has the whole debauchery and that whole aspect of it. It's very, very naughty, but it's cabaret, and it's got all the great songs in it.
And Wizard of Oz, too. That's a Broadway show, a little more family-friendly.
You know, oddly, The Wizard of Oz is it's a Broadway musical from the genre, but it's never really played Broadway.
Really?
If you think about it, it's never really played Broadway. It's a musical that was staged originally over in London.
Okay, West End, okay.
Yeah, West End. And but great family show. Of course, I grew up with The Wizard of Oz and the movie, and many people did, and many people my age and older did. But this is two performances on a Saturday, at 2 p.m. and at 7:30 p.m., great family show, great classic.
And just looking at your website, you have so many other shows at the Thrasher Horn that are coming through. By the way, the website is thecenter.org.
TH Center.
I misread that. thcenter.org, including the Purple Experience, which sounds like a really interesting Prince tribute. That looks cool, too.
It didn't take long for you to figure that out, did it?
Yeah, get your tickets now for the Thrasher Horn Center for the Arts' upcoming season. Amazing shows coming to Orange Park. thcenter.org. Denton Yaki is the executive director of the Thrasher Horn Center. Thank you so much for coming up here to talk with us about all this. Pretty
delighted
exciting.
To be here. Thank you very much.
Love to support musical theater. Speaking of music, finally this hour, it's your chance to learn a little bit about the classic barbershop quartet sound and hear some great music, all from the Jacksonville Harmony Chorus. They are having a big open house next week. We've got a preview right now with one of the quartets, the Sapphire Quartet. Ladies, good morning. Oh, already warming up.
Let's go.
All right, so this is going to be an open house from the Jacks Harmony Chorus next Tuesday night at the United Methodist Church on Talbot Avenue. What's going to be happening?
Well, it's at Avondale United Methodist Church on Talbot Avenue in beautiful Avondale. Now, we lease space from them, so the church is very kind to us. However, we're not affiliated with church, so we lease space from them. So we are inviting all ladies that love to sing to come check us out and maybe see what voice part they might sing or what speaks to them and get involved, because we have a lot of fun. We perform all over the community and go to competitions and things like that. And it's just a lot of fun, really a sisterhood.
And we tend to think a lot of the barbershop sound is for male voices, but lots of women are doing barbershop.
Oh, my goodness. Now, we belong, yes, absolutely. We belong to a larger organization, international organization, called Sweet Adlines International.
Yeah.
So help me out here, Anne.
There's 20,000 of us.
20,000 of us worldwide.
Okay. And you sound amazing. Now, you ladies, the Sapphire Quartet, are one of the featured performers. We are so lucky. You're going to do a little barbershop singing for us right now. What are you going to perform?
We're going to do a classic, Sandman.
Here they are, the Sapphire Quartet.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him the word that I'm not a rover, and tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, I'm so alone. Don't have nobody to call my own. Please turn on your magic beam. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Come hither, gleam. Give him a loving heart like Pagliacci, bum, bum, and lots of wavy hair like Liberace. Sandman,
yes,
someone to hold. Would be so peachy before she's too old. Please turn on your magic beam. Mr. Sandman, bring me, please, 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 Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
Choir Quartet. You ladies are unbelievable.
Oh, gosh, thank you so much.
That gave me chills.
Chills are good.
Chills are very good. Go see the Jacksonville Harmony Chorus performance next Tuesday night at the Avondale United Methodist Church on Talbot Avenue. The Sapphire Quartet, part of the worldwide Sweet Adelines.
Actually, it's an open house.
It's an open house.
We will be singing for people, but it's an open house. So ladies, come.
Everybody, come on out.
About us, okay?
Amazing. Thank you for the performance. That was such a great way to head into the weekend. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. 1A's up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you've been listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. This program will rebroadcast tonight at 8 p.m., and we'll be back Monday at 9 o'clock. Enjoy your weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.